Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you want to meet myself and Ollie Davis of Wrestle Ramble fame? Well, you can do just that by joining us at Wrestling Media Con on September 8th and 9th from the Bowlers Exhibition Centre in Manchester, England. Ollie and I will be doing a live episode of Wrestle Ramble as well as signings and photos. But that's not all. Wrestling Media Con will have shows from Cultaholic, Inside the Ropes, Wrestling with Regret, Don Callis, Botchamania, Art of Wrestling, Sean Waltman, and more. There will also be the first ever Wrestling Media Hall of Fame and wrestling shows from Impact Wrestling, where they will be taking on the best the UK has to offer, and Revolution Pro Wrestling featuring the legendary Jushin Thunder Liger defending his British J Cup crown. Tickets are on sale now, so head over to WrestlingMediaCon.com. That's WrestlingMediaCon.com.
Support WrestleTalk.
Give us a subscribe.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
Hello and welcome to the Wrestle Ramble Podcast. I am Ollie Davis and I'm joined by Luke Owen.
Hello, Swap Nation, and a hello to you, Oliver Davis. How the devil are you?
I'm good. I want to know how was Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah, I went to go see Ant-Man and the Wasp last night with my wife, and it was, I really enjoyed it. I think it's a really, really solid, fun movie.
Like this episode of SmackDown.
In fact, I also gave it 3.5 stars. So, yeah.
What did you give the first Ant-Man?
4 stars, actually. I really, really like the first one. I think the first one's got so much heart to it, and I think the set pieces work really, really nicely. Part of Ant-Man has been slightly ruined for me by someone pointing out that its own science doesn't work. They say in the movie that the reason why Ant-Man is so strong is because his molecules have been compressed together, which is why when he's tiny and he punches someone, it's got the weight of like someone who's 5 times the size of him.
Sure.
If that's true, and this is a bit of a spoiler for Ant-Man, then Hank Pym wouldn't have been able to carry around that tank with him. It would have been so much heavier.
Of course.
As it's smaller. And there's a lot of that because you see it in the trailer. They like his big office thing shrinks down into like a little carry case thing. In theory, that should be like you could not lift that whatsoever. And people are just carrying it like it's a beach ball at times.
And I suppose the reverse of that would be anything that's made really big isn't heavy.
Yes.
It'd almost be like a beach ball.
Yeah, because their molecules are spread out. But I suppose... because
the Yanks got this film ages ago, by the way. After a decade of UK getting Marvel movies first, now we're in a weird phase where the Americans are. We haven't had Infinity War out on DVD yet.
Well, the only reason we got it late is because of the World Cup.
Yeah.
They decided that they didn't want the World Cup to affect its box office takings.
Which is fair enough,
but it just means that we got it more or less a month later.
I'm salty about Infinity War, though. I'm going to rewatch that.
Yeah.
Because it's not out here for another, like, 3 weeks.
Which is ridiculous.
Last week of August. And so this is the big question for me. Lady Partner hasn't seen Infinity War because she just, like, her priorities are wrong. And can she seen everything else because I've made her. Can she watch Ant-Man and the Wasp and not have Infinity War spoiled?
The only film you'll have needed to see is Civil War.
Which she's seen and she just didn't like.
Yeah, because the majority of like the character plot stuff, like is continuing on, is built from Ant-Man and from Civil War.
Hmm.
And leads off into that, which kind of like it sets you up where we are in the sort of post-Civil War world. I won't say anything here. Civil War is about all you need to have seen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. Because she likes Paul Rudd because she likes Friends.
Yeah, and Paul Rudd has a bath scene in it.
Ooh.
So, like, there's always that. My wife was very taken by that sequence. The film finished, she was like, Paul Rudd's a very handsome man, isn't he?
Mm.
And I said, yeah. She goes, a bit surprised by that bath sequence. I was like, where did this come from?
Well, he's a handsome man, and he just seems like a lovely chap.
And he has not aged a day.
Yeah.
He looks younger now than he did in Halloween 6 in 1996. I don't understand it.
He is the opposite of Jack.
Jack.
Isn't that the name of the Robin Williams character?
Oh, yes, yes, that's what you're saying.
Who gets really old real fast and has a strangely paedophilic relationship with a teacher.
I thought you were just going to mention Benjamin Button.
Ah, that would be the other way round. No, he becomes... Yes, so it would be Benjamin Button.
Yes.
That is a much more appropriate example of that.
And time appropriate as well, because Jack came out quite some time ago.
That's where my mind goes to first.
To the point where I'd forgotten it even happened.
It's not like a distinctive thing either. If you just say, oh, it's like Jack, that could mean so many things. There's a lot of people called Jack out there.
Yeah. What was that Doctor film he did?
Patch Adams.
Patch Adams, that's the one, yeah. Have you ever seen the guy, the real...
brutal movie.
The real Patch Adams.
Probably, but and him refresh me.
And him talk about that film, because he hates that movie. Because he said that all it does is reduces the work that he was doing, the scientific work he was doing, to be a clown. And that's not what he was suggesting in any of his research. Not only that, but like the love interest that's in Patch Adams the movie is completely fabricated. And in fact, it was his friend who was a male man. But they wanted to have this love interest in the movie, so they gender swapped it, and then... But then they still have the same consequence, where they get killed by one of his patients.
Yeah.
And he's just like, oh, that seems a little bit like, that's not really a good representation of what actually happens.
Yeah, movie producers like to do that, don't they?
Don't they just?
I was listening to Joe Rogan's interview with Macaulay Culkin today.
Lovely stuff.
Which is weird.
Macaulay Culkin, a wrestling podcaster, Macaulay Culkin.
Mm, yeah, he likes the graps. And they got onto Foxcatcher, the sort of amateur wrestling movie, which Kurt Angle has real life experience with. It's a fascinating story if you don't know it. I won't go into it now because I'll butcher it, but just search Foxcatcher, or better yet, go and watch the overlong, quite tedious at times, but very well acted movie.
I don't remember you having that criticism when we, because we saw it together. We saw it at the London Film Festival.
Yeah, yeah.
I really liked it.
Yeah, it's a 3-hour roar. It's really good, but it's 3 hours, you know. apparently there's a bit where Channing Tatum goes to wrestle amateur wrestling a match against in real life he was this super cool black guy who came to the ring in like a kimono, and you're like, well, that's a really cool character from real life, but the movie producers changed it to a white guy from Russia. Well, why change that?
Because you've got to sometimes, haven't you? Yeah.
Because the Russians are the enemy in American
absolutely
movies.
Absolutely. Oh, those dastardly Russians. Where's Steven Seagal when you need him to take him down? He's now working with them, essentially. It's a bit of political humour for you. But what did you do last night?
Oh, I went to see Kinky Boots.
Oh, of course you did. Yeah, you went to the theatre.
Yeah.
How was it?
So my lady partner knew one of the dancers in it. So we got to watch...
She knows everyone.
Yeah, we got to watch him... dance around very impressively in high heels and in full drag.
That is impressive. Yeah.
It's funny, but the songs aren't good. I can't remember a single song, and it's kind of funny. And sometimes it's super hokey. And afterwards, because we went with like that crowd, and we met the person who was in it afterwards for a drink. And it came out that Cyndi Lauper wrote all the music.
No, really?
80% fact. Haven't checked this. That's what was said. And like we were talking, and you know when you get that bit when everyone's like, wow, that's really impressive. And you think, oh, I've got an interesting Cyndi Lauper fact. I was like, hey, if it wasn't for Cyndi Lauper, WWE wouldn't be where it is today. And then it was just kind of like everyone went, ah. And I just, oh, why did I even say that?
That's an interesting fact for us, I guess.
Yeah, but I just didn't even think about it. I'd already had a glass of red and it just fell out. And it was, I stayed silent for the rest. I didn't know these people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have like extrapolated that out because you've got to speak to your audience, haven't you? So this audience might not know what those three letters mean. So you'd be like, man, if it wasn't for Cyndi Lauper, like she changed pro wrestling forever. Like that, because that to be, you might invite someone to be like, oh really?
And then later, one of them inevitably asked me what I did, and I said, I work on a wrestling channel on YouTube, and they just went, I love YouTube, and turned around. Yeah, I love that thing.
Yeah. Before we get out of there, I'm going to do a quick Rusev Hey for you.
Rusev Hey!
From Chris Smith, who's already shared a story about meeting Brian Kendrick, and he's got another one that he would like to share with us. When I was 8 years old, back in 1999, my family and I were on holiday in Florida. We were eating at a restaurant when my dad pointed to the next table and whispered, that's Hulk Hogan.
Wow.
I couldn't see the back of his head, but the bandana was all the evidence I needed. We politely waited until he had finished eating before asking for a photo, which he happily agreed to. What makes this story funny, though, that it's in 1999. I wasn't a wrestling fan yet, and I didn't care that he was the most famous wrestler of all time. I knew he was a wrestler, but I didn't know about Hulkamania, Andre the Giant, or the NWO. In fact, my only knowledge of Hogan at the time was that he was the star of the hit movie The Secret Agents Club. Hope you enjoyed that reference, Chris. And I do enjoy that reference because that film is very, very bad. And I kind of love it. It also features Brian Knobbs of the Nasty Boys in a really odd, like, Hogan's my buddy and he got me a cameo walk-on in this one where he plays like an umpire at a kid's baseball game. And it's basically, imagine Hulk Hogan in the 1990s doing a James Bond film from the 1970s.
Well, that sounds terrific.
It really is,
brother.
But we've got SmackDown to get to. Talking about whether or not SmackDown are doing a little bit of shooting from the hip on some of WWE's booking, and then we talk about a show which I thought was really good, but everyone's going to assume that I thought was rubbish. So here's the show.
Well, there were a few jokes in last night's episode that initially just seemed to be kayfabe jokes, but then there's one joke that actively made fun of something we've all been mocking the last couple of weeks, and it's WWE's booking of matches. So, it started off with Charlotte and Becky Lynch. They sort of had a tense falling out.
Mm.
Well, not a falling out or anything, but it's
a
been alluded
meeting.
To. Yes, yeah.
A tense meeting where essentially Charlotte walked up to Becky and they sort of talked over each other because the first one wanted to say that, you know, they make the first move, but then, nope, you talk. And Charlotte was saying, hey, look, I didn't want to steal your spotlight, but Paige gave me the match. I'm a competitive person. Obviously, I wanted to win. And Becky was like, look, I want to be happy for you, but got to be honest, I'm, you know, gutted that it's not me in a one-on-one match. Further planting those seeds for the heel turn that I'm almost certain is happening. And I've said it before, and I was saying it to our editor just before we press record there. If this is a swerve and Charlotte is turning heel, that's proper rubbish storytelling.
Yeah. This is from when Charlotte beat Carmella last week to be also added to the Becky Lynch Carmella match.
Yes, which we'll come on to because that's the next joke that they made. But they then went on to say, I'll let you continue.
Yeah, Becky's like, yeah, we're all fine. Like, we've got a match up next. It's against the Iconics. I mean, we're not Bayley and Sasha Banks.
Which is weird, because I didn't see it as like a shooting on WWE booking until you mentioned it. I thought it was just because we are, as fans, supposed to know that the four of them are friends. Mm. And they're just sort of making some jokes about their friends.
Well, that's why this one's on the wire.
I see.
So this one, you know, this makes sense in a kayfabe world. But if the stars of SmackDown watch Raw, which
you'd imagine they do.
Yeah, you'd think they do at a jaunty angle. And when we say shoots, by the way, this is obviously work shoots, but it is like SmackDown making fun of these concepts. But yes, this example fits within the characters and the backstage sort of world in WWE that the four horsewomen of Charlotte, Becky, and actually that's another interesting point. They don't really allude to them all being a group together.
No.
And now we've got the Evolution pay-per-view coming up. There's rumours of the four horsewomen of UFC versus WWE being back on a match that was scrapped last year.
I wonder if they'll do that at Evolution.
Mm.
Or they'll do a variation of it, because I've made my prediction. I think that's where Rousey is winning the belt. So that takes Rousey out of that match. And whether you then just do it as, say, Bailey, Becky, and Banks versus... Oh, no, actually, then you've got Shayna Baszler's going to be women's champion.
in theory as well. So that takes her out of the match. So maybe you just do it as a tag match of Bayley and Banks versus Marina Shafir and Desmond Duke.
Yeah, we'll have to see. But yeah, that's like Sasha and Bayley has been what most people are calling the worst storyline of WWE, not just of this year, but in quite a long time. Just in its stop-start nature, it went on forever. It seems to have come good now because they're actually a pretty
solid tag team.
Pretty solid tag team.
Got matching gear and everything.
But do not forget that to get here, we had at least 6 months of awful storytelling.
A lot more than that.
And then, you know, years of rubbish context beforehand. Anyway, that's just like a little joke from Becky and Charlotte. And they both joked and they laughed and they drank their tea.
T-Generation X.
But then this is the way more interesting one for me. And
but again, what I love about this, it also works within the context of a character.
Mm, yeah. Well, the character is another thing I want to talk about here. So this is Shinsuke Nakamura is doing an interview backstage with Renee Young. He's talking about the United States. I can't remember what
he was talking about. His match with Jeff Hardy, because they've confirmed that it's a one-on-one match. It's Jeff Hardy versus Shinsuke Nakamura for the United States Championship at SummerSlam.
Sorry, Randy.
Well, Randy might get added in next week.
Yes, possibly.
He's still stirring that pot. Randy's got to get on the card somehow.
Yeah, and R-Truth walks in with Ty Dillinger trying to hold him back. They've become quite a nice odd couple pairing backstage in WWE. You know, like when you need two guys to lose to Samoa Joe. They're just there for you.
They're your guys.
And R-Truth walks in and he's like, I want a US title match. And I'm going to get it by beating Carmella.
Wait, is it his words were? I can need to find where it is now.
It was so funny. The delivery was perfect.
Yeah, he says, I'm going to do what everyone else does around here. I'm going to beat Carmella, and that's how I'll get the match.
Yes.
It's genuinely a very funny line of dialogue.
Very funny line of dialogue. Very funny delivery. Like, he couldn't have delivered that better.
So perfect.
And this is after a couple of weeks of Becky beating Carmella to get the SummerSlam title match. Charlotte doing the same thing. And then there were reports yesterday, still might happen, that Asuka, where's she been? Like, she also might beat Carmella to get added, to make it a four-way.
Mm-hmm.
And off the back of those reports online, you get this line, which I think is one of those perfect lines where it works for the crowd who are just watching week-to-week telly, and it really works for fans who obsess over stuff like this, like us as well.
Yeah.
Because it hits all those levels. Now, that's not a joke about, it doesn't so much work in character or continuity. This is a joke about how WWE has been booking that feud.
Yeah, but it also works because R-Truth doesn't really know what's going on. That's why you've got that out with Truth doing this joke, because he is a man who just assumes that he knows what the rules of the land, and he doesn't. Because then Ty Dillinger says, like, one of you can't face this. And I can't remember his words, but he sent you, like, points to Renee Young. He's like, well, I can't fight Renee Young. She's a girl.
Yeah.
But obviously he wants to fight Carmella, who is also a girl.
That's how you get the title shots around here.
Exactly, you got to beat Carmella to get him.
And that's something, like, you know, people have been making fun of online as well, that Carmella looks like a weak champion, everyone has to beat her to get another title shot.
Character makes no sense.
And this is where, allow me to fantasy book for a second.
Please do.
R-Truth, is he actually the Deadpool of WWE? Does he know that he is in a predetermined wrestling show?
I mean, it's an interesting concept.
And that knowledge of self-awareness has driven him insane.
Whether that could work or not is a very different matter, because that's quite a line you have to toe. That'd be very difficult to pull off.
You get into WCW Vince Russo
pretty
booking.
Much, yeah. That's where you start to, like, oh, I'm supposed to, I know the finish of tonight. Mm. I'm not jobbing out to you. And you start to, you move into those territories there. But if it's played up for yucks, then possibly it could work.
I'd like, this is not an overt thing that has to be shown on TV, but I think you can add in enough things just for fans like us, which WWE don't really seem to care about, actually, so they probably won't do this, where it looks like R-Truth is a self-aware wrestling character.
Which I quite like. Yeah, that's quite funny.
Quite good, I think. Anyway, that's just some fun stuff. Let's get on with the rest of the show. I'm sure Luke loved it. Dick, dick, diggity, dick, diggity, dog. Dick, dick, diggity, dick, diggity, dog.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Did you love it, to steal a Pachitiism?
I thought it was fine. Like, I gave it a high smack bang in the middle. That's three and a half. That's 3.5 out of 5.
Okay.
Like, that, I thought
that's
it was.
That's above fine.
Yeah, that's above. Like, it is, yeah. Like, I'm fine as Mike. It's a good show. I enjoyed the show. It's just, for me, whereas last week's was, like, far too promo heavy and there was, like, you know, pretty much no wrestling whatsoever, this one balanced the promos and matches so much better, but it didn't have that killer angle that made you want to see SummerSlam. It just had one excellent, excellent match and that R-Truth joke, and then everything else was just sort of there.
See, I disagree. I think everything else was there being very good, and also further in everything, you're 2 weeks out from SummerSlam, you don't really need that. You know, there are a few, sure, there are a few storylines here that could have done with it, and that would have made it maybe even a smack. Damn, that's the top one, right?
It is, yeah.
I thought this was smacktastic, but if you say you were a high smack bang in the middle,
yeah,
we've given our stuff away right at the start. Those are very close. Anyway, we started off the episode with Randy Orton cutting a killer promo.
Well, it was, and again, this is where I'm going to sound like I'm a negative Nancy here. This was a good promo, but it was the same promo he did 2 weeks ago. And that's where some of my issues lie with this show, is that last week you had that absolutely awesome angle with Randy Orton just destroying Jeff Hardy. 2 weeks previous,
wiping off the face paint.
2 weeks previous to that, you had him do that another awesome beatdown. And then he came out and he explained his actions. Then he beat him down again. And then he just sort of explained his actions again. Mm. And it's the same content we've already heard, which is, this is why I'm beating up Jeff Hardy. This is why I'm doing this. I'm this, I'm that. You don't respect me. And then he just walked out. And I was like, cool, so that led to nothing then. Like, it was a pointless segment. If this segment wasn't on the show, it wouldn't have affected A, the feud, or B, the show overall. So it was an absolutely pointless segment.
Well, it wasn't pointless, but I would say it was probably surplus.
So, you know, tomato, tomato.
Well, no, I think they're different things, because if it's pointless, it did succeed in its point in getting over Randy Orton as a heel.
But we got that last week.
We got that last week,
and the week previous, and the week previous to that. So it's not like, oh, now I definitely know he's a heel.
But the thing that I didn't like about the promo, although I did love it, it's great to see Orton caring about a character again.
Great promo.
Great delivery of a promo.
Yes.
Is that it does seem he's going in the character direction of, I'm just going to beat up all your favourites. And I was hoping he would flip the old legend killer character on its head and go after all the young up-and-comers. But he's not. He's definitely going after Jeff Hardy.
He is.
He's definitely going after everyone at the top. So that's a shame for me, because there's so much potential in that character there.
Yeah, I think the character that you and I sort of like fantasy booked in our head with this sort of like, with this paranoid, delusional man who was afraid that someone was going to take his spot and he was going to try and sort of squash all those people that might try and be the, you know, the next pretender to the throne. And but here it's mostly just like, I really just don't like Jeff Hardy. And I don't like Jeff Hardy because you lot like him. I won the Royal Rumble, and I've won Survivor Series, and I've main evented WrestleMania, and I don't get no respect around here.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's that sort of lazy stuff of, oh, the crowd, you don't respect me, and it's like, well, man, he's just been getting cheered for like 4 years. People love you. It's a bit hollow.
I do like him as the three most devastating letters in this company as RK, and he won't finish it off because that would, to finish it off would be a babyface thing to do. So he just throws the mic. I like that touch. I think it's really nice.
Just as an aside, to finish off that Randy Orton young up and comer killer character, you know, at the end it could all be revealed that he's just doing it because he wants to be defeated. He wants to create the next star. Okay, then we got the Charlotte and Becky Lynch bit backstage, and we got that really funny, yeah, we're not Sasha and Bailey line from Becky.
Mm-hmm.
Again, great delivery because Becky is a great actor.
Yep, and she should make a great heel in theory. And it's funny because, like, I was going through a lot of the photos, getting them ready for the SmackDown review, and it almost seemed like every time I froze or, you know, I stopped the recording to screen cap something, or I was getting a photo off of www.com, there's always Becky in the background that is pulling a face that's just like, you mother effer, you stole my spot, and I'm so going to get you back for this at SummerSlam.
Ooh, she's a grumpy Becky.
She's a grumpy Becky. She's not happy.
Grumpy Becky.
Which probably means that Charlotte is the one that's turning heel, because it'll make no sense.
So they have that little bit of tension backstage, but it's all good.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to tag together.
Yeah.
Carmella comes down for this tag match. And then the Iconics, Charlotte and Becky's opponents come out, and they cut a really good promo.
I love the Iconics. Yeah. The crowd trying to boring at them, but I really, really like the Iconics, and I think their shtick really works. But I just think that they haven't been given a win, so no one takes them seriously now. So when they do come out cutting their promos, everyone will just chant boring at them. So I think, you know, it was bound to happen.
I thought that boring heat was good heel heat.
Oh, no, I
don't think it was go away. I think it was, oh, no, you just said something bad about Orlando.
No, I thought it was the other way around. I thought it was more like, I don't want to hear this.
Oh, I thought it was the good kind of heel heat. I thought that, because usually these Iconics promos, even though it's good content and it's great delivery, often falls flat because of the crowd. But the crowd reacting in the way they did here, I thought, made it feel like a better segment.
But maybe not so much back up the point that I was making, or to argue against that. The crowd then weren't really booing them during the match, so the heats aren't really connected, I don't think.
Yeah, but that's because it's a match. You know, the crowds don't care about matches.
No, maybe
unless
not.
Unless it's rest holds.
Yeah.
So
which is what they got here, more or less, because this match started and then there was an ad break and it came back to Becky getting the hot tags. We didn't even get the rest hold spot. Mm. We just got the hot tag. And then they sort of ran wild. But what I loved the finish to this. The finish, which is that Becky locked in the disarmer and Billy Kay broke that up. And then the first thing that Charlotte did was she tagged in, which is a smart play if you're a tag team. She tagged in, locked in the figure eight, and she got the win. Mm. It's more fuel for that Becky fire of just being like, I could have had the win there, but Charlotte tagged me out and she got the win.
Yeah.
It's nice subtle stuff in there, and she could see it in her face when she was celebrating the win, and when she did the promo afterwards with the backstage segment with Charlotte afterwards. I think it's just really, really good stuff from Lynch.
Mm. Yeah, and she sold the stuff in the Iconics promo really well as well, which was, it was like a word association game. Orlando, rubbish. Charlotte, overrated. And then they say Becky, and like, oh, we can't see you. You're in Charlotte's shadow. And Becky was like, she sold it in a way where she's conveying anger with the Iconics, but somehow also side-angering.
I know,
to
right?
Charlotte. It's great.
It's really good stuff.
To hit all those notes.
I think if Becky does turn heel at SummerSlam, it will be a really, really nice and well-told heel turn. And she'll have a reason to have done it. She'll be justified in her heel turn, and it will make for a much more interesting character coming out the back of it.
Yeah, it's.
I wouldn't have done it because I think Becky is an incredible babyface. But if you are going to turn someone heel, at least make it worthwhile. At least make it a good thing. Someone actually sent me a tweet before we came in here, pitching their idea for a Carmella face turn, off the back of this, sort of coming out of all these sorts of things. And I suddenly thought to myself, I couldn't think of anything worse than a Carmella babyface turn.
She moonwalks.
I suppose she does. But my first thought was like, oh, do you remember when The Miz was a babyface? When he was like Ric Flair's protege and he was winning matches with the figure four. And WWE genuinely thought people would get behind The Miz as a babyface. Nope, no they did not. He was heel shortly thereafter.
Sometimes people are just suited for one type of character for the rest of their lives. Yep. Heel or babyface.
Absolutely.
And
that's not a bad thing.
One more thing on the Charlotte tag in for the finish here. She hits a moonsault.
Onto their arms.
Onto their arms. So the Iconics are holding arms between each other. Charlotte hits her moonsault.
And the force of it...
That sends all of them over, she only landed on their arms between them.
I would say it was not the worst spot in this match, nor was it the worst spot in the two women's matches that we got. I thought that Flair's, twice she's done this now, where she does like a little leap over to the outside. But either she is not getting the distance, which it really does look like she isn't, because she almost lands on the apron. She's leaping that short of a distance. Or everyone is just wildly out of position when she does it. Because she did it again. She did it last week and essentially just landed on the mat because Carmella was, a foot away. And she did it again. And the Iconics had to sprint to the ring in order to catch her. I'd really suggest not doing that spot anymore.
Yeah.
Springboard at the outside. Do your moonsaults to the outside. That's where Charlotte's shines.
And Charlotte and Becky pose staring down Carmella on commentary. Triple threat. Then we got a New Day promo.
This is funny. He's doing a Richard Pryor. Well, a Richard Pryor impersonation of a white guy. I thought it was funny.
Yeah. Kofi was doing that bit. Taking over from Rene. But this was one of those charming taking over from Rene ones rather than the just Thanos away bit.
Well, they handed the microphone back to her because she's got a job to do.
And then Rene's like, oh, you guys. Showing some character. Yeah. How dare she? We got a clip of Miz... from earlier today in his little Mr. and Mrs. set.
Mr. and Mrs. set?
Yeah. Accepting Brian's challenge for SummerSlam. And I kind of had to blink and replay this segment because I couldn't believe that they undersold this major plot point in the feud about Miz finally giving Brian this match. What the hell, WWE? This was like the major source of intrigue from last week. Brian challenging for the match and Miz saying, no, you're beneath me. And then you pay this off with a WWE.com exclusive nonsense thing that you film from earlier in the day just for the idea of a cheap running spot at the end, which was cute, but really... a lot left on the table here. This was very disappointing.
Well, this is, again, back to that point I was making about like why a lot of SmackDown I just thought was just more or less there. Like, the Miz interview that he did with Byron Saxton was essentially the exact same interview they did last week, only Byron was in the ring and not Daniel Bryan, and then Bryan did the attack afterwards. But like, it wasn't like that attack was like, well, that's a nice new wrinkle to this. It didn't really feel like much of anything. And yeah, I'm in agreement with you. I think that Miz kind of almost forcing... Brian forcing Miz into accepting the match, maybe putting him into the yes lock until he screams that he wants to give him the match, something like that. But Miz just going like, yeah, all right then.
Yeah.
But I like...
I think Brian should have put the baby in the Miz. The baby in the, yes, the yes lock, yeah.
Yeah, like, I just think he should have done something, because he laid down the challenge last week, and then this week he just went, cool, let's have the match.
Well, remember last week we were... kind of fantasy booking again. Oh, the directions you could go in here. The only way that Miz will accept this match is if Brian's career is on the line.
Yeah.
And with the real life backstage story stuff of Brian's contract coming up on September 1st, which Miz alluded to in the promo from last week, there's so much stuff there, and you make it believable. You kind of make it like a CM Punk thing, where a lot of a big portion of the fans are actually going, wait a second. Is that real? And that's like the sweet spot for wrestling for me. But you just drop all of that and just make it a normal match. And like, I'm not saying it shouldn't just be a normal match, because Miz and Bryan is this thing that's been built up for years and really has quite a special blood feud element to it. But week after week, WWE are making me want to see it less. This is one of those open goal scenarios where you just have to tap it in. and they keep hitting the post or a baby that just walks. Like, think of the ridiculous angles we've had for this feud that writes itself. And you have tried to go in there and write it over the top of the good stuff that was already in there. This feud, actually, is really being hindered by Miz and Mrs.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we're jumping ahead a little bit here. But that was all he wanted to talk about in the thing. He wants to talk about how it's getting better ratings than Total Buzz, which I bloody called a couple of weeks ago that he would do. As soon as it did really win the ratings, I was like, I cannot wait for that to be part of the feud. And you're right. I think the Miz and Mrs. really is hampering a lot of this, because it feels like they want to promote that more than they do this match. And it's getting to the point now where I'm almost thinking, if Bryan is resigning, we're going to get Miz and Bryan for the next 3 pay-per-views. Because it will just be like, it won't be this blood feud that culminates at the big show. It will just be any old feud that we just do for 3 straight pay-per-views, because that's what we do.
Yeah, this really felt like a one-off big-time match. You pay off at SummerSlam and they don't meet again. Bryan gets the win. They don't meet again for like another 6 months. But yeah, it's not that this is a bad feud. This is still a good feud. Both guys are doing great promo work. Some of the angles are actually quite enticing. Some are absolutely ridiculous. But it's just what this could have been is so much more than what it is right now. It's really disappointing and sad, because you only get one time to pay this off properly. And it's been in the works for years and years and years.
Yeah.
Years and years and years, as Viper would say. Next up, we got the Charlotte and Becky backstage after winning bit, where they cheered with the tea.
Yep, Becky said that she loves tagging with her best friend, but at SummerSlam it'll be very different.
That's another thing. Miz accepting the Bryan match was just a 45-second clip.
Yeah, but he got a promo to do later on. He's got Miz and Mizzy to promote.
Then we got a Samoa Joe versus AJ Styles video package, which was good.
Mm-hmm.
And then AJ comes out, cuts a promo on Joe in the ring, said, actually, I love my family.
And then he left.
And then he left.
And that, like, you had that awesome promo for Samoa Joe last week. And how do you follow up on that? By AJ cutting a really nothing promo and then leaving. And Joe was watching backstage. That's what I mean, man. Like, you set something up and you're not building up on anything throughout this show. It's just, this was just another promo that was there. And the crowd were not into this promo at all.
It was a boring promo.
It was a really boring promo, but it felt like he was appealing to all of the parents that were in the crowd. But the parents weren't responding to anything. So it came off really, really flat.
Mm.
And it was actually, yeah, really, really dull. The only thing I liked was the last line where it says that, you know, you won't be walking out of SummerSlam the WWE champion. You won't be walking out at all. It was a good closing line, but the crowd were not into this whatsoever.
And then it cuts to Joe watching on a monitor backstage. Ha ha ha! Evil heel laugh.
Yeah, like as I said in the SmackDown review, what this show was missing was a killer angle.
Yeah.
It was missing a killer angle that would make you want to watch SummerSlam. And you could have had that here, you could have had it with the Miz and Bryan thing, you could have had it with the Randy Orton promo at the start. But it was really, there was sort of nothing, there was just stuff that happened.
Yeah, because it had the killer match.
It had the killer match, good lord did it have the killer match.
But that's not this next one.
No.
No, that's a bit later on. So we got Lana working out backstage with an exercise band, and Rusev comes over and apologises and says, I'll come out with you for your match against Zelina Vega next.
Goody, rematch.
Yeah, why?
Because Lana lost and she asked for the rematch. That at least makes some sort of sense. That's me putting logic onto it.
They didn't say that.
No, that was me projecting.
Yeah, and Lana's like, you're forgiven. And then Aiden English comes in. And I was like, that's just all, because I want them to be together. It's like, I'm invested in all of these characters and as them as a team. And English apologizes genuinely. He's another great actor.
And he just,
like, this has been a week of great acting for WWE. Heyman, Becky Lynch, all the New Day, just how they do stuff. Yeah, great all around.
It doesn't happen a lot, but it should be praised when it does.
Miz, Bryan.
Yep.
And Rusev forgives him. And I'm like, yay. But then as they go to the match for Lana, Rusev says, hey, buddy, you might want to sit this one out.
Yeah, you want to stay backstage.
And that was like, this is a nice story now that I feel English is justified in turning heel. And, you know, English could get a nice little heel run off of this.
Yeah, he could do.
Then we got Zelina Vega versus Lana. It was a nothing match.
Yeah, nothing match. Slightly better than last week's, but yeah, still pretty much a nothing match. And then Almas kind of got into the ring, and that he and Rusev had a little tussle on the outside. That distracted Lana. And then is where
I thought Rusev was really good the way he went after Andrade.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, don't you go near my wife. And it was good fire.
And Andrade's very good at doing, like, the getting into the ring distraction. He's very good. Like, he gets up onto the ropes and everything. Doesn't just stand on the apron. Proper looks like he's going to get in and attack someone. And then, so they're having this tussle on the outside. Lana is climbing up onto the turnbuckle. And she's kind of like, she's got one foot on the second rope and one foot up on the top one. Aiden English runs down and he kind of rugby tackles Andrade into Lana, who then, I think, got shot because she did this big old flip dive over the top rope, and then Vega did the double knees and got the win. And I watched the replay. I was like, in kayfabe world, how did Lana take this bump? Like, what force made her do that bump?
Yeah, it's...
looked hokey as hell.
The ropes work weirdly, man. Like, that, like, you know, the Irish whip people bounce back off. Sometimes, if one... because they're so taut.
Yeah.
If they get knocked, it could just... like, bullets, like, ricochets off bullets. No one knows where those fragments go. JFK, JFK could have just been shot once. Because just the way ricochets work, inexact science.
Yeah,
no one knows what direction bits are going to go off into, and I can only assume that's what happened to Lana here.
It's a better excuse than what the commentary said, so I can buy into that.
But it's physics.
I made this joke in the news as well, in the review, and I'll make it here. This is less Rusev Day and more Groundhog Day. We're just sort of doing the same angle over and over again.
Snap, son.
Right.
Then we got that great R-Truth and Shinsuke Nakamura
so
bit.
Funny. Really, genuinely. If you, we get a lot of comments in the YouTube videos that say they don't watch Raw and SmackDown, they just watch us doing the review. Seek out this segment. It'll be on their YouTube channel because it really was funny.
And the Paul Heyman interview.
Yeah.
And the Paul Heyman addendum.
I did, yeah. Actually, I mean, that's the other thing. Sorry to go back to the R-Truth promo. Nakamura then starts cutting a promo on him in Japanese. And he walks away and everyone's like, oh, what did he say? And R-Truth's like, I can't believe he just said that. And you know that R-Truth doesn't understand what he just said, but he knew in his weird mind that what he said was a challenge.
No, R-Truth does know because he knows he's in a wrestling show.
Maybe.
Yeah. He got the subtitles. He was seeing the subtitles in front of Nakamura. Then after that segment backstage, it cuts to the commentary team. I'm not going to lie. When I see the commentary team doing, oh, now we're going to throw to this thing. Now we're going to talk about how great Stephanie McMahon is because we've got an Evolution promo. Now we're going to spend the next 20 minutes running down the 400 matches at SummerSlam. So I turn off and it cuts back to ringside. And Byron's taking off his headset and throwing it down. Corey's shouting at him. I'm not really listening to any of this. Like, what's happening here? I got really excited, went back to, like, rewatch that bit. Nah, it's just Byron had an interview with The Miz in the ring. Corey was annoyed that Byron got that spot. I thought we could have a two-man booth.
Corey was annoyed that Byron got the journalistic interview that really Corey Graves should have got. But it was just, I mean, I said this in the review as well, it was such an odd little setup, because Byron is standing in the ring, and he's like, you know, my guest at this time, The Miz, and you expect The Miz to come out, but no, The Miz is up on the screen, and so Byron's interviewing him on the screen, sort of, but he doesn't really do anything. It wasn't an interview in the slightest.
Yeah.
It was such an oddly staged segment.
Yeah, why is Saxton the guy you need? I like Saxton. It's just, didn't really need any of this. Rene Young could have done it. Rene Young would have been perfect because of the Talking Smack history with Brian and Miz.
No one remembers that. Come on, mate.
And she could say, like, hey, you know, this happened back then. I was there. Oh, yeah. It's just, damn.
Do you know what this feud needs? I'll tell you what this feud needs. It needs a video package. It needs a video package that it will hype you up and say, like, here is the history of this. Almost like running through their history week by week of just like little vignettes of just like Daniel Bryan when he was first in NXT, Daniel Bryan winning his first championship. All the little bits of pieces, times they crossed over, that talking smack stuff. You could run these little bits to explain to an audience why these two have this history, rather than having Miz cut the same promo week in, week out. Because this is now the third week in a row that Miz has cut this promo. And it is the same content every single time. And that's, it's not building any interest into the feud, whereas visually that might add a little bit to it. And it's not like WWE are rubbish at making video packages. They can make video pack. They managed to make Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar look like an all-time incredible feud. They could work wonders with this rather than just do it on SummerSlam, where you've already sort of bought the pay-per-view and are already watching it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And they've done that with quite a few other feuds. They did it with AJ and Joe earlier in the show,
which has had two angles to cut stuff from.
Yeah. So maybe they just thought we have to try and reverse engineer a feud out of this.
Yeah, got nothing to work with.
But the Miz's promo was content-wise the same as it has been for a while now. But performance-wise,
great.
It's great. He's a great promo.
Great.
And then, because this is on the set of Miz and Mrs., I mean, it's quite clearly the backstage area.
I'll tell you what, man. I know we're in a feud with them at the moment, but Russ from Cultaholic made an incredible discovery. That there's a piece of artwork that is in the same... It was in the Miz segment last week. It was in Brock Lesnar's training room last week. And it was in the Paul Heyman interview this week. It's this random piece of artwork that I was actually looking out for it this week.
It's the new Pure Country, Pure Heart poster.
It's following them everywhere.
It's just like a generic sky landscape thing as well, isn't it? It's not calming at all. It's just infuriatingly banal. But... Bryan attacks Miz from out of nowhere, which I quite liked.
I liked it, yeah.
And that they had a brief scuffle, but Miz pushed Bryan into a vase, and the vase shattered, and Miz's security guys ushered him
Miz,
out.
Miz cracked him over the head with a vase.
Oh, was that how it worked?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I thought, really, poetic justice-wise, it should have been the Pure Country, Pure Heart poster. Just pick that up and bam, smash.
Should have been.
But what I really liked about this is the camera didn't just end on Bryan going, ow. It ended on Bryan getting up zombified and just like looking in the distance again, and sort of shuffling off towards Miz's direction. And then it cuts back to Corey and Todd Phillips, and they're talking about how Bryan's obsessed now. And I thought that worked quite well as a wrinkle in this storyline, but in no way the most effective version of this feud.
Absolutely not.
Then we got the R-Truth Nakamura match. R-Truth and his entrance was so over. The guy looks phenomenal. He's got great charisma. I forgot I love R-Truth so much.
Are you now pushing for an R-Truth like push?
I don't know. Definitely make him more featured.
Yeah.
Because he can just like get the crowd with his music on side immediately. There was a spot in this match where he did his usual "What's up" thing, and everyone did it along with him. And then he looked at Nakamura and went, "Come on!" And that was really cool. It really got me into the match. Nakamura dominated as he should have, but I thought Truth looked really impressive.
Truth did look really, really good in this, but I can almost see them more going with a Truth-Ty Dillinger comedy partnership where maybe they'll be like the C team and they'll win the belts. Maybe.
Or like a Rhino and Heath Slater pairing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wouldn't
be
bad at all.
The third tag team like that, yeah.
Yeah, so that's... I just thought, what a weird thing to have 2 weeks out from SummerSlam and Nakamura's Hardy match. Sorry, a brief pause there, and apologies if you've heard a kind of noise throughout the entire show.
We thought there was a fly in the room. Turns out there wasn't. It was actually my chair rubbing against this
metal cabinet thing. Yeah. Hopefully that's fixed. But it also sounded like this podcast or video cast is haunted now.
By a fly.
So we had the R-Truth Nakamura match. Next up, we got Bludgeon Brothers taking on a trio of jobbers.
Loved this, mate.
This is great.
Yeah, no, really. Yeah, that was the point you were going to make before we got interrupted, was the Nakamura Hardy feud, and you just did this. But I think that's good to have a little showcase match for Nakamura to show that he's dominant before you lead up into a Jeff Hardy match. That's good because it shows that he's a winner.
Yeah.
So that's fine. And again, Bludgeon Brothers here shows that they are a completely dominant force. We haven't seen them on TV for a little while now because they've been doing the tag team title tournament, and they're not the sort of team you can have sitting out at commentary like Carmella could or Bobby Roode did.
They couldn't just brood.
No, because they bludgeon. So they said they had them here come out, and I genuinely thought they were coming out to do commentary, and I was a little bit concerned because it was just before the tag match, like, which you knew was going to be the main event. But then they came out here and they beat up three jobbers, and it was wonderful.
Yeah, great stuff. Like Rowan doing this crazy double crossbody on the outside, taking out two guys, and then the great spot of the Harper being scoop slammed onto a bunch of bodies.
Yeah. I would have preferred the commentary team to put over more how devastating the Bludgeon Brothers were, as opposed to just laughing at what the jobbers were dressed like. Because Corey Graves was so distracted that one of them was dressed like Taz and had a white beard. Yeah. And that's all he could talk about.
I really liked the Bludgeon Brothers promo before this match.
Spooky promo, man.
In a sauna, it looked like. And it looked like they showed a bit more personality. It wasn't just, we will bludgeon, up is down. Down is up. It was
those days.
It was Harper going, this is going to be fun.
Yeah.
We enjoy this. And he smiled a bit. And I was like, oh, now I'm more scared.
I wonder if that again was more of that SmackDown shooting on WWE booking where he was doing his version of Charlotte's. This is going to be good.
Woo! Then we got the SummerSlam match rundown, which is still going on. And finally, for the main event, what a corking match, a way to round off this tag team tournament. We knew it was going to be excellent if they gave them the right amount of time, and they gave them about 30 minutes. The Bar taking on the New Day.
Man alive, like, we said it last week and we've said it in previous iterations of this show. It shows you how much I've missed The Bar because, god damn, they're so good. And this is, like, I know a lot of people say that we need to split them up because Cesaro needs his singles run.
And Sheamus.
And I can totally see that. But I do love these two as a tag team. And I've missed The Bar so much. And I've missed this dynamic with the New Day. And they just had an absolutely corking match. And do you know what I really loved about this? The thing I loved the most about this match, aside from obviously all the great near falls and great action and this, that, and the other, they structured a match around ad breaks.
That's interesting.
Like, the middle portion of this match was essentially a little mini match that ended with this big near fall, and then it was like, and SmackDown rolls on, and then you came back and you built to another set of near falls. So you had, like, it worked around the structure of the ad breaks. It didn't just feel like, here is two segments where we do rest holds and then we'll do the final stuff after the second ad break is done.
Yeah, it wasn't like the heels are on the outside, the baby faces are inside shouting at them, cut to commercial. And I'm so thankful that it was in the main event spot as well.
Yeah, really.
Because I could have seen this as going in the middle of the show. And it does add a significant amount of weight to a feud if it does get that main event spot.
And a tournament as well.
Yeah, and it really shows that SmackDown are behind this tag team wrestling thing, which is, tag team wrestling's great, but Raw is just, like, it's completely ignoring it now. So it's lovely to see SmackDown putting it, like, on a pedestal again. So last week I said, I don't know what it is about The Bar. They're still Sheamus and Cesaro to me. And you were like, no, I see them as The Bar. And we said, it's weird because everything they've done, their move sets, they've got matching costumes, they've got a matching team name. They've done so much to make them work together. I don't know why I feel this way. I was talking it with Fakador, and Fakador just looked at me and said, but they've still got their old entrance music. I was like, of course.
Because you got the and then into Sheamus's music.
So I think that's all they need. They need the joint entrance music. That's when they'll break up, though. The crowd was super hot for
this. God, weren't they just? The crowd loved New Day. Like, as soon as they came out, there were massive chance of We Want Pancakes.
Yeah.
So, like, it's a testament to how good the New Day are. They were so much more over than the WWE champion.
Mm-hmm. And it's, I thought it was a great crowd all night.
Yeah.
Much like Jacksonville were. Sort of got that SummerSlam fever. And that, so it was Florida. No, it was Orlando,
which is in Florida.
As
is Jacksonville.
Oh, okay, so it was all round there. That's the way to get Reigns cheered.
Exactly.
Just have it all from his home state. And it was almost as though Orlando have never seen a near fall before. They thought every near fall was the end of the match.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a testament to the guys in the ring making you believe those near falls. But it was so fun for me to watch this and get swept up in what was clearly not the finish, just because the whole crowd were going crazy for it.
There was a spot during this match where Cesaro did a superplex on Big E. And because they did a long time of setting it up, I kept thinking, it was like, and Big E's going to reverse. Big E's going to reverse. Thinking to myself, I was like, they're not going to do this spot, though, are they? They're not going to do a big old superplex on Big E. And then they did, and I was like, good Lord, that looked so awesome. And then Sheamus dived off with a big diving knee. That was just so much good stuff throughout this. Cesaro had a wicked sharpshooter locked in for ages, and he transitioned that into
a cross space spot.
And then, like, the best bit of this match, really, which was the finish, as well it should be, Cesaro's got this crossface logged in. Big E stands up, still in the crossface, hoists him up on his shoulder, midnight hour. New Day pick up the win. They're facing the Bludgeon Brothers at SummerSlam. I loved this. Really, really terrific match.
What works so well about that last bit there as well was, so it was Cesaro got like, did the swing first, which got the crowd crazy, then into the sharpshooter, but Kofi's taken out on the outside, so he can't save Big E. And everyone's like, oh my God, Big E's going to tap. But Xavier Woods on the outside, like willing Big E to get up as much as Big E's own inner strength to stand up. And it just got the, having that Woods dynamic out there really got the crowd into it even more. They were already really into it. It was a really fun, great match.
Yeah.
And then Bludgeon Brothers are shown sort of by an exit, not in the traditional Titantron bit or up in the rafters.
So it was a nice touch.
Yeah, it was nice, and it was just like their backs watching on. The crowd didn't even seem to know they were there. They just turned away and walked off.
Yeah,
really, like that was a nice new way of visually presenting stuff.
Yeah, I like that.
So corking match, and now we're going to get the New Day and the Bludgeon Brothers at SummerSlam. Because of course you are, because that's babyface versus heels. It's remarkable I bought into the bar winning so many times here.
Well, I thought the bar might win because it's what they haven't done before.
Yeah.
Because they've done New Day versus Bludgeon Brothers already. Like we were doing that at WrestleMania, and I just thought they might try and do something new. But I'm really glad it's the New Day. It'll be on the pre-show. But hey, man, New Day and the Usos were on the pre-show last year, and it stole the show. So there's every chance that this could do the same thing if it's given the time it needs.
Yeah, and that was a show with at least two other great matches.
The other tag and
the Fatal 4-Way.
Oh, fellow.
But that's all we've got time for today. We've already said our ratings, unless you want to do a... Because I think this is still a smacktastic show.
I know we had
our criticisms of feuds, but none of it was awful. It just left a lot on the table.
I just think what it was missing was a killer angle. Like, I didn't come out of this wanting to see SummerSlam.
Mm.
And that, like, for me, that's when I'm watching a show, I want to build towards things. I just felt that the show wasn't really building towards anything. Just felt like it was the same show as last week, but with a few more matches.
Just a really fun show without
any killer angles.
Yeah.
But it's interesting as well, because you've often said that should be your base level, like being a solid show should be like just your base level where every show should be. So I find it's interesting then that because even though this is a very base level and a solid, you're still giving it the 4 out of 5.
Well, it's because of that
main event.
It's because that was half an hour. That was a third of the show.
It was less than half hour. I think it was about 20-ish minutes.
Probably in live, it was half an hour, if you include the air breaks. That was a quarter of the show then. So for me, that's what bumps it up to a SmackDown.
That's fair enough. If you have not done so already, the Patreon poll is now live where you can go and vote on which song the losing team between Cultaholic and WrestleTalk are going to perform at Wrestling Media Con on September 9th. You've already heard the trailer for Wrestling Media Con at the start of this podcast, so you know what that's all about. Are you excited? Have you got like a personal favourite that you would like to do from the poll?
Well, we got together all the ones. There's a lot of stuff that isn't wrestling theme tunes on there. I think because of the repetitive nature of wrestling theme tunes, I probably prefer to do an actual song with bridges and breakdown bits.
I have bad news for you then.
Oh, what's winning?
Well, all the actual songs are like 0%, 4%, 2%.
I'm really hoping the medley gets...
Sexy Boy by Shawn Michaels, although he is on the song. That's currently 16%. The Best of Both Brands is at 12%. But way out in the lead at the moment is Mashup of All the Above.
Good, because that's going to be the best one to watch live, I think. No one wants to... It'll be funny for 15 seconds for us to perform any of these songs, but then it will get boring and there's still 3 minutes left, and that 3 minutes is going to get very, very long. So at least the mashup way, we can just do chorus here, chorus there.
And I can tell you how much...
How much by?
It's 30%. It's way out in front. It's doubled what's in second place. Shows you how poor of a job WWE have done with Mike and Maria Kanellis. 5% of the vote has gone to Mike and Maria's incredible entrance music.
I remember they debuted at Money in the Bank.
Last year.
And that was the last thing I watched, really, before I went to Glastonbury. And I was obsessed with that song. And I found like a 1 minute rip that someone had done on YouTube before they started cutting their promo. And so it was taken from Money in the Bank, and I just kept on playing that, singing it at the top of my lungs at 4 a.m. around campsites. Who's that guy?
Absolutely. Right, would you like a an agony arts request?
Yes, lay it on me.
Okay, so I would say, though, to who this person is, if you've sent an email and not read it, don't just resend the email because it makes me not want to read it. So this is from Anonymous, obviously. So basically what happened is me and a girl from my school year broke up about 3 months ago. Lately, we've been getting quite friendly with each other again. It's a winking face emoji. We had a disco last Friday night, and me and my ex met up together at it and started kissing, but nothing more, just kissed. We never said we were going out or anything like that. So some time has passed that evening, and I see her getting cozy with another fellow.
Oh, that's never nice.
Sitting with him, laughing at his probably bad jokes. So me and my mate went onto the dance floor, and I thought to myself, F her. 10 minutes passed and my friend said that I've got a new girl for you. So I went over and I kissed that girl a couple of times. I took her Snapchat and went on my way.
Is that what people do these days?
Yeah, you get their Snap deets, I guess.
Wow.
I don't... Is that the ghost?
Yeah, in the little yellow box.
Yeah, I don't know what it does, though.
It's just to send dick pics to people.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah,
okay.
Because it deletes it after a while.
I thought that's what Tinder was.
I believe that leaves a record. But the idea behind Snapchat would be you send a clip, like a 10-second video clip, to all your friends. And then once they've watched it, it disappears into the ether. Although people can now record the screen and take screenshots.
Is this a bit like those boomerang things that I don't quite understand?
Well, that's just a looped video back
and forth.
But I don't
see the point of it.
It's aesthetically pleasing.
Is it? It's nauseating.
Sometimes. It's a good thing for female fitness professionals to shake their booties on and for Ollie to watch them.
I just think it's like GIFs that are 3 seconds long, where they just like repeat over and over again. You're like, this is giving me a headache after a while.
But it's not repeating it. It's going
reversing.
Forward and going back and going forward and going back.
Still has the same nauseating effect.
Yeah, I'm surprised WWE haven't used it as an aesthetic yet.
They don't know what it is yet.
Yeah, so 4 years from now, there'll be boomerangs and all the promos.
They're still on tout.
So we've got an agony art.
Yeah, so anyway, he's taken a Snapchat and went on his way. I go outside to get some fresh air, and my ex comes over to me and we have a chat. I asked who that guy was she was sitting with, me expecting some BS excuse. And then I'm shocked to find out when she says it was her cousin. This was the first moment I realised I'd done effed up. She then says,
"You done effed up, boy."
She then says, "Do you think I would cheat on you the first night we got back together?"
Oh,
this was the second moment I realised I done effed up. I panicked for a second, and then I just kissed her again, thinking, "How would she ever know I kissed another girl?"
She can't speak if you kiss him.
So later on, she said she wanted to log into her Snapchat on my phone, as hers was dead. I think we can see where this is going now. She opened up my phone and she said, "I see, I'll leave the name blank, has added you back." Me panicking, not knowing what to do, I just went, "Oh, did she?" My girlfriend just responds, "Yeah, I was meant to give her your Snapchat later, but I forgot." She then asked, "How did she get it to you?"
So this is someone in your social circle.
Apparently so. Another twist to this. I said, I added her in quick thought, and then I recognised her name. I walked off, figured out that the other girl that I kissed was actually one of my girlfriend's BFFs.
Oh, no.
This is the third moment I realised I'd done effed up. So present day, the other girl has started texting me and coming on to me.
Oh yeah.
Me not knowing, to me not knowing I'm one of her friend's boyfriends. So what do I do? Do I come clean and explain to both girls and hope they both forgive me? Or do I just tell the other girl what's happened and say nothing to my girlfriend and hope the other girl doesn't say anything? I need your advice desperately. Thank you guys. Love you. This is like proper young people problem, isn't
this
it?
This is, isn't it? Snapchat, discos. so it's just young person stuff. Okay. So how... I mean, there's no indication of their actual age. It sounds like they're in school.
I would say so. I mean, he does say go from my school year, and they broke up about 3 months ago. Then they got back together. Yeah, a little roundup.
Stuff.
Broke up, got back together. They went to a disco. He thought that his girlfriend was already cheating on him with someone else. So he went off and kissed some other girl. Turns out it wasn't another bloke, it was her cousin. And then he got Snapchat from this other girl. She found out about the Snapchat. Now the girl with the Snapchat is doing some texting and doing a lot of coming on, and he doesn't know what to do. Mm. What do you do in this situation, Ollie Davis?
So I wouldn't worry about this too much, and I don't think you are, because I think you see the humor in this situation.
Yes.
This is like a fun story to tell people, and everyone's going to get over it in real life.
10 years later.
Yeah, like, you know, you've been broken up for 3 months. It's not that big a deal, to be honest, and it is funny. And all these sort of romances, I know it sounds patronizing, but they are fickle at that age. Like, it's called puppy love for a reason. I've been there, Luke's been there, we've all been there, and we move on.
On that moment, though, my friend did marry the girl he dated at school, and yeah, they're very happy and they've got two kids. So
they're lame.
Yeah, so it can happen. They got married at 21.
Wow.
I know.
So what I would suggest... And I'm suggesting this based off the sort of person, and don't take this as an insult, the sort of person I think you are, because you found this, just the nature of the email, it's funny, it's like you're experimenting with, you're discovering all this. Just say you don't want anything serious and go out with both of them.
Ollie Davis! That's
it. Oh,
that's...
you're young. This is the perfect time to do it.
That's terrible advice.
It's not terrible if they agree to it.
That is a bit terrible advice.
It's not terrible, man.
Maybe it's a generational thing. Maybe...
But polygamy is an option. But, like, not everyone has to have that one person all the time.
I would... And I'm going to take a very different route here. I would take the honesty route and just explain the situation. Like you say, like, and you come up and was like, I realized that I've messed up here, but now she is texting me saying like this, this, and this, and it's not cool. I don't want to have secrets from you. This is not a cool way to. It's a toxic way to have a relationship. So let's be honest with each other, because eventually she's going to find out otherwise, and then it's all going to get dragged up, and it's going to become a big thing. If you squash it now, it doesn't become a thing.
Well, our approaches aren't mutually exclusive. Mine involves honesty. You've got to base everything above on honesty. And you come clean. But within that, I mean, do you even want a girlfriend? If you don't want a girlfriend, and it doesn't really sound like you do because you kiss someone because the girl that you thought you were getting back together with talked to a guy. Like, that's a pretty fast move.
Seems like an appropriate response.
Yeah. So... You be honest, and you're like, look, hey, we've been out, it's not going to work, but, you know, I'm up for just seeing each other, non-exclusively, like, by the way, I've also, you know, started chatting to this person, and, you know, clear it with them, and you could have yourself a little harem.
I don't think that's good advice in the least, but that's just my personal viewpoint on this.
If
you want to take a more basic view of this, who's got the best Snapchat? Like, because you're going to lose one of them, and you're going to be like, oh, I get really good Snapchats out of this one, don't I? Then the other one don't give me as good Snapchats. Maybe that's how you want to... Is that how young people base things on these days?
You don't want to be pinned down at that age. Unless you do.
Ollie Davis thought this until he was 27, 28?
Yeah, but for a 25-year-old who didn't like to be pinned down, I had 3 over 2-year relationships. I'm needy. I'm reverse. This is my advice. You can settle down later. If you've got the ability to befriend as many women as possible at one time and not annoy anyone by being open and honest, go for it.
I'm going to do one last Rusev hate before we get out of here. Hey, Luke, brackets, not Ollie. I thought I would explain. I thought I would email in about the time I met Chris Jericho.
I've drunk water the wrong way.
Oh, mate, you're right.
I think it's karma for suggesting polygamy. Carry on, Chris Jericho.
I was probably around 9 or 10, so it was about 2009, 2010-ish. God, that makes me feel very old. And my dad and I had just left Raw. I was so excited because it was my first time at a wrestling show, and despite how bad the storylines and wrestling might have been that night, and they probably were, it didn't matter to me because I was a kid who just liked seeing John Cena bury anyone who stepped in the ring with him. Back to the story. We were leaving the arena the show was being held at, and we took a wrong turn. We were unfamiliar with the town it was being held in. It was about an hour or so away from where we actually lived. As we were driving, we saw a black car pull up of the back of the arena and cut us off. My dad, being pissed off, started to curse at him until he noticed the license plate was a rental. This immediately got him thinking that it could possibly be a wrestler. So he pulled into the lane behind him and tried to speed up to see who it was. What happened was more or less a high-speed chase as we tried to get look into that car as he tried to get away. Eventually, we got to a red light, the car stopped, and we got next to him. I could then see that it was none other than Y2J mouthing, effing red light! He then looked over to me and smiled and waved, and I rolled down my window, and he did the same. Me being a child and not knowing what to say, brackets, and not knowing that wrestling wasn't real at the time, close brackets, I said, "Hi, Mr. Jericho, thank you for wrestling tonight. You did a really good, even though you lost." He said something along the lines of, "Thanks, kid. Have a nice life and quit following me." Then sped off. So there you have it. That was the time I kind of met Chris Jericho.
That's a good story. Involves drama, car chases, Chris Jericho swearing at a red light.
It's everything you could possibly want from a story, really, when you think about it.
So every couple of months...
Oh, that was from Harrison Berry. Didn't remember his
Thank name. You, Harrison Berry. Every couple of months, someone posts on Reddit that promo segment where Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho, after the Survivor Series mishap, and this was like 2 years ago, going back and forth about like who cost the match, and it really looks like they're going to break up, and it goes on forever, and they go, okay, let's say who's really to blame. One, two, and that you think they're going to say each other, but they both go, Roman Reigns, and then they hug and the crowd goes nuts. I watched it again this morning. Chris Jericho's amazing.
I saw someone was showing out a wrestling clip online that it was a segment I'd forgot happened, but everything that happened in it was just so awesome. And it's Triple H, Shawn Michaels, CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, and Randy Orton all in the ring at the same time. Hunter and Shawn Michaels are in suits and stuff. And this sort of altercation happens, and CM Punk sort of accidentally hits Triple H, and then Shawn Michaels super kicks Punk and lays him out. And then all of a sudden, Bryan hits a flying knee on Shawn Michaels, and he takes this massive bump. Triple H, seeing what happens, Randy Orton's trying to RKO him, sees what happens, and then Triple H pedigrees Daniel Bryan out of frustration for hitting his friend. And I was like, man, hey, the star power that was in that ring, and the awesomeness of seeing Daniel Bryan hit his running knee on Shawn Michaels, and the fact that CM Punk was there, and I sort of miss CM Punk. It's great stuff.
Oh, better days.
Better days. But anyway, that's all we've got time for today. We'll be back on Saturday with the magazine version of this show. We'll have crap gimmicks, your mailbag questions. We're expecting a good amount of mailbag questions. We have quite a few new pledge hammers come in off the back of this Patreon pollage, so please do send in your questions. Take care. I love you. Goodbye. Do you want to meet myself and Ollie Davis of Wrestle Ramble fame? Well, you can do just that by joining us at Wrestling Media Con on September 8th and 9th from the Bowlers Exhibition Centre in Manchester, England. Ollie and I will be doing a live episode of Wrestle Ramble as well as signings and photos, but that's not all. Wrestling Media Con will have shows from Cultaholic, Inside the Ropes, Wrestling with Regret, Don Callis, Botchamania, Art of Wrestling, Sean Waltman, and more. There will also be the first ever Wrestling
Media Hall of Fame and wrestling shows from Impact Wrestling, where they will be taking on the best the UK has to offer, and Revolution Pro Wrestling, featuring the legendary Jushin Thunder Liger defending his British J Cup crown. Tickets are on sale now, so head over to WrestlingMediaCon.com. That's WrestlingMediaCon.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.